Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traina here with you. It is Thursday, February 20th, as I record this. I'm actually recording this later in the day, which unfortunately I had to do that because of this cold that I'm dealing with. So I do apologize that it's coming a little later than usual. The cold has been wreaking havoc with my voice. So when I have a voice, I sit down, then I record and do the best I can and just run the show a little off schedule. But still, committed to bringing you the latest in terms of news, thoughts, guests, all things NFL, all things Giants. And on today's program, in segments 2 and 3, I have Dan Shonka of Our Lads, who joins the program. And Dan and I spoke about the upcoming NFL Combine. We spoke a little bit about the draft, talked a little bit about the Giants' needs and the direction that they might go in. So really a great conversation with Dan. For those of you who don't know Our Lads, which you can find at ourlads.com, they've been around, I want to say, going back to the 1980s, the days of George Young. That's how old and how esteemed that this publication is. And Dan and his staff, I think, have only been in place now for the last 15 or 20 or so years running Our Lads, and they really do a great job. They have a fantastic site in which they put the up-to-date depth charts. That comes in a lot of, it really comes in handy when you're trying to, you know, do roster planning and all that good stuff. So check them out. And they also have some subscription products that Dan will tell you about at the end of the program. So before we get to the interview, though, just want to bring you up to date on what's going on. So far, still nothing from the Giants as I record this regarding salary cap cuts. I thought by now maybe they would have announced it, but now I'm wondering if they're just going to wait until Friday for a Friday dump instead. You know, this way, if any guys that are not in the plans, you know, give them their release, let them go ahead and you know, have their agents start negotiating new deals for them next week at the Combine, when all the agents, all the GMs, all the head coaches, and most of the coaching staffs are going to be in place. So, nothing yet from the Giants. I'm anticipating Alec Ogletree, Antoine Bethea, Rhett Ellison, possibly. I'm not sure if he's going to be a definite cut or not, but he could be a salary cut as opposed to a cap cut. So he's another one. And then Kareem Martin, that's the other guy who I'm anticipating will all have their contracts terminated. Now, the other big news that's kind of going on as I record this is that as of Thursday afternoon, the NFL owners were in New York City meeting on the parameters of a new CBA extension. The current CBA does expire this year, and the two sides have been working towards a new agreement in order to maintain labor peace. And the new agreement, you know, some of the highlights include a 17-game season, which would mean a three-game preseason. According to an NFL Network report, it would also include a longer training camp acclimation period, which basically means, you know, at the start of training camp, whereas right now players don't go into full pads until they're about 2 days into training camp, that would be extended to 5. And then an extra 2 teams in the playoffs. So I haven't really had a chance, per se, to kind of sit and think all this stuff through. But just off the top of my head, I will say this. I am all for player safety, but I'm just not sure that there's a way to necessarily achieve the ideal safety levels without totally diluting the game. And the game's already been diluted quite a bit. Now, I've covered this team, this Giants team, and this and the NFL for that matter, dating back to not the start to the previous CBA, the one that was in existence before 2011. And I even remember going back to the days when before they had a CBA, they just had, the labor unions were in their infancy. And it just seems like, okay, you know, they want to make it safe. And I get that. I have no problem with that. But I just feel like sometimes I wonder how much of these measures are diluting the effectiveness of the game. For example, they don't want live tackling. Well, how is a coach supposed to teach it? You know, because it's a skill that needs to be practiced. So how do you teach it if you can't practice it? I mean, if you're not going to allow for the practice of live tackling, why have it at all, you know? I think back to what Joe Judge said in his introductory press conference and how he said that, you know, they're going to be a physical, fundamentally sound team. And I'm just wondering how these new terms and rules that are being discussed and thrown around are going to affect this, you know, affect the plans that he has. So that's going to be interesting to see. The thing, though, that I'm mostly curious about is the expanded playoff fields. Now, as it is, I don't like the playoff setup the way it is, where you can have a team that, because they finish 7-9 in their division and win their division, they get into a playoff ahead of, say, a team that finishes 9-7 but finishes second in their division. If anything's got to get changed, that's what it is. I just think that, you know, while you're allowing for two extra teams to have a crack at the Super Bowl, that if they weren't good enough to get in with a smaller field, how far are they realistically going to go? I mean, I just think that's kind of silly, in my opinion. But, you know, it's all about money, obviously, which is why, you know, part of the reason why the combine drills have been moved to primetime next week. So it makes for a longer day, but it'll give everybody an opportunity, you know, when they get home from work to sit and watch the drills on TV. I think the NFL Network will have them. I think ABC will have them. So there will be that opportunity. The other thing, the last thing I'll say about the new CBA, I think the reason why we haven't seen a whole lot of roster moves being made has to do with the fact that teams are waiting to see if this new CBA comes through. And if it does, if it is approved, then we'll start to see a lot of moves made because, you know, obviously you'll have new cap rules in place, you'll have modifications and stuff like that. So just going to be a real interesting next few days for the NFL. I think, I'm still not so sure that they get it done by the time free agency rolls around, free agency being the start of the new league year. But, you know, stranger things have happened. And if they can get it done and assure that there won't be a work stoppage, hey, great, I'll take it. All right, Giant fans, you are listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, Dan Shanka of Our Lads joins the program, so stay with us. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Giants is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Giant fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Giant fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on Locked On Giants podcast. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. Patricia Traina here with you. And joining me now on the line is Dan Shanka. He is a scout. He works for Our Lads, which is one of the oldest scouting publications. I can remember getting that one back in the days of George Young. That's how long it's been around. And Dan and his team do a wonderful job with scouting draft prospects. And I'm delighted to have him on the program with me.
Great. Thank you, Patricia. Yeah, Tom Hepler founded Our Lads back in the early 80s. And in fact, he used to send out scouting reports on fax machines. He was one of the first to do that. And then I guess he ran into young Mel Kiper at one of the tracks one year. And so he and Mel were a couple of first that ever did. And I guess Mel's dad actually did the stuff too at that same time. So, but anyway, you're right, Patricia. Our lads goes back a long time. We've been doing it 15 years now. And I think altogether our lads has been around 40 years now.
Yeah, one of the oldest. And I'll tell you what, they don't make them like our lads and Joe Buxbaum. Remember his stuff? I mean, those were really the gold standards of the day. And I'm so glad that our lads is still around. You're doing a fantastic job. And just absolutely thrilled to be able to talk 2020 NFL draft with you today. So let's jump right in. And Dan, if you could give us an overview of what this draft class's strengths are and where maybe some of the weaknesses are that some people think are a strength but aren't quite a strength based on the study you've done so far.
Well, Patricia, I've been scouting NFL football players since 1988. And I don't remember, and I could be wrong, but if I search my recollection, I don't think I've seen a better receiver class than this group that's coming out. I mean, there's depth, there's big guys, there's strong guys, there's, you know, mismatched guys, and it ends up with their quickness and their size. They're multi-level receivers, the short, medium, and deep guys, guys that can line up, you know, any place across the formation. They just don't work one side of the field. They work, they'll line up motion to any position. So I think that this is really an in fact, I'll tell you, there's going to be normal draft choices. They're going to end up being signed as free agents and then end up making it. But I would be shocked if there's not 40 receivers drafted, which theoretically, that's almost one-fifth of the draft. But so it may not end up being that high, but there is really, I mean, there's over 100 receivers this year that caught 50 or more passes. I mean, it's just incredible, you know, what's out there. So that is really, you know, the top end of it. I think there's some pretty good tackles this year. You know, I don't know if they're, you know, going to be Pro Bowl caliber guys yet, but there's some talent there at offensive tackle. I think inside center and guards, there's some really good football players. And I think there's solid running backs, a couple premium guys at the top. But I think that, you know, they're basically going to be late first or early second round guys. Linebackers that can run. And now with the NFL, what you need in the NFL are linebackers in the base 4-2 defense, the 4-2-5. You need linebackers that can run and cover, not big guys, but guys that are, say, 6'2", 230, 235, that can really run and cover. There's those type of guys in this draft. So, and not a ton of depth at corner, but and then some pretty good safeties. So it's kind of, you know, what you're looking for. You'll be able to, you know, pick that tree and pick that apple off your particular team tree and what your needs are.
Now, just going to a couple of needs that the Giants have, offensive tackle. I think this is a class that they have to dip their toe into and early at that. How much of a drop-off is there between the top prospects? And I think there's like maybe three or four before you get, to, I think, until you get to the next level. I don't know. You tell me because I know you've studied them a little bit better.
Well, I tell you what, Patricia, the tackles this year, we may be different than most, but we certainly like the Tristan Wirfs kid from Iowa as our top guy. And but other guys that may go in the first round, I mean, Jedrick Wills, and ironically enough, both those guys are right tackles, which is kind of interesting. But Wirfs played left tackle early in the year when Aledric Jackson from Iowa, he was out with an injury, and they kicked Tristan over to left tackle, and he really did a nice job. So if Iowa didn't have two pretty good tackles, he probably would have been, you know, their left tackle, but he did a terrific job at right and left when he had the chance, and he's a heck of an athlete. Wills from Alabama, he's a really a stout guy. He's he's one of the top, say, five. Andrew Thomas from Georgia, again, a guy that's super competitive, tackle. He's got length to him. He's going to be 6'6" and change and 320 pounds. And I'll tell you, he gets a little bit more fired up or competitive, I guess, when he gets beat around the edge. He kind of cranks it up when, you know, they played like the Auburns of the world and some of those pass rushers got around him. But I think he's the third in our opinion. And then Becton from Louisville, a man mountain, you know, 6'7", 375 pounds. I tell you, he's going to have real problems with double move guys, somebody coming outside and then coming underneath him and things. His ability to redirect isn't overly quick, but he is so big. I mean, he's going to start probably at right tackle, plays left for Louisville, but he'll come in and start. He's raw and a little bit of a mauler, but he's got some ability. And then Josh Jones from Houston is a really good athlete. We got him going in the second round. But some people may have them, you know, late in the first. He doesn't have the length that you really like, but he does have very good athletic ability, and I think that he's going to eventually, you know, work into that left tackle spot in the league in a couple of years.
What about on the edge? Now, this is another spot that the Giants really could use help with. They took a couple of guys in the past, Lorenzo Carter 2 years ago, O'Shane Zimenez last year. The two of them show promise. They haven't really developed into, you know, a number one edge rusher, if you will. It looks like they'll probably have to go into free agency. I would think free agency is probably the better way to go with regards to edge rushers once you get past Chase Young, or is Chase Young just like an overrated type of rusher?
Yeah, well, I tell you, Dave Gettleman is probably keeping his fingers crossed and wants to see a couple teams jump up ahead and trade with Washington. You get a quarterback, and with Detroit to get a quarterback or something, and then he'd be right there at number four with his basket open to catch Chase Young. So, but I don't think he could be that lucky. But if he did, that'd be outstanding for the Giants and their fans. But Chase Young is the premier pass rush. He'll be one of the top 5 to 7 pass rushers in the league once he's drafted. Even as a sophomore, he was a terrific football player because when Bosa got hurt, Young came in, and even with a slightly sprained ankle, he was an ultra-productive guy. And then, of course, this year, he was getting double-teamed late in the year and then chipped, so he's really getting triple-teamed. He fought through a lot of that to make some plays. So, but I think that Espinosa from Iowa is not your speed pass rusher that the Giants would like to have. He's more of in a four-man front, he would be the left defensive end, or in a three-man front, you know, he'd be your five technique guy. And he'll get, you know, he's one of those guys who get 5 or 6 sacks a year, but he doesn't have that explosive edge speed. And then a guy that he won't be up there at number four by a stretch of imagination, but Gross Matos from Penn State, he's one of those kind of guys, Patricia, that you'll look at him and you'll say, wow, this guy is a big time NFL pass rusher. And then other time you go, geez, I mean, he kind of disappears and he doesn't show, you know, and he'll get locked up by some people and not get off. So he's a raw talent, but I could see somebody taking him later in the first round. But I think that those guys would be, you know, the ones right now that we would see in the first round and really Gross Matos would be late. Espinosa, he'd be, you know, not necessarily for the Giants, but for some four-man front team that, you know, not counting on him being an explosive edge pass rusher. But, yeah, Chase Young is the guy.
Now, Dan, you've run, I'm sure, more than your fair share of mock drafts. And for those of us who are kind of novices to the thing, you know, to the art of mock drafts, or who don't really understand the drafting process, can you just kind of walk us through a little bit how you approach it? Is it based on value? Is it based on team need? I mean, at what point do you marry the two together? Because I'm sure they have to merge at some point.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, right now, like the fun time that I had when I was scouting is when we were with the coaches and the scouts, and we'd all have a team or two, and we'd do our mock drafts. What we do, we hold out off at our lads really to our mock draft. In fact, we'll probably have our first one come out here before the combine, maybe this weekend. But what you're trying to, we grade all these guys, and then we tie in the grade that we have on them and a team need, and then on the mock draft part of it. But when you're setting, in the big chair on one of these teams, you're going to have to take the best player available. If you don't take the best player, let's say, for instance, Detroit ends up signing Slay. They don't really need another corner, but boy, there's Jeff Okuda sitting there from Ohio State. Well, you draft him. If he's the right guy on your board after, say, Burrow's gone and then Chase Young is gone, you got to take that best player, because if you don't, you're going to get yourself in trouble. Unless you got, say, for instance, you got a guy like Wirfs. Say they got Tristan Wirfs equal on their board with Jeff Okuda. Okay, now then you say, okay, we could sure use that left tackle or that offensive tackle more right now than defense back. Then you could take that guy. But what you do when you have your board all set up, you've got your value across the top, where you'll have, like right now, Burrow's will probably be by himself. All if you have your board listed with your positions going down, vertically, then across horizontally, you have, your players, the top player at that board. Then you're going to, go with if you got two tied, then you'll go with your greatest need at that time. But you must take the best player. And then that diminishes a little bit as you go down. Then you're getting, say, later in the first round, you may go ahead but still, you're always looking for the best player that's on your board that might be sticking out, because all the teams will have, they usually do anywhere between 150 and 175 players that they'll have on a board, and you'll get your whole draft from that group the way your scouting staff drafts. So now there'll be a guy sticking out on that board when as you start peeling them off, as different teams start taking these guys, you'll see, hey, we got this guy graded a little higher than other people, and we really like his fit. We like the value for our team, and it would fit a big need. So that's how sometimes you get that marriage that works.
We're speaking with Dan Shonka. He is with Our Lads, does a great job. They have a publication, and they have a website, ourlads.com. And they are very busy this time of year ahead of the draft, so make sure you check them out. And Dan, let me ask you about this. With the combine coming up next week, I know it's kind of a broad question here, but what are you expecting to see or to come out of this combine? Are you looking for certain guys to maybe solidify their stock, or are you anticipating some surprises? Are there some guys that are, you're not quite sure of, and that the combine is going to help them? I mean, what are your expectations as you preview this?
Well, I'll be interested to see if, hopefully it won't be rumor, it'll be fact on, what really comes out about Tua, for instance, and see how, while that hip is doing. And, of course, I know there's preliminary reports, and of course everything's all, sweet roses and all that stuff. But, when you go through that combine process, each ball club has a minimum of three or four doctors that will check every bone in those guys' bodies to see if they are going to be able to hold up to the rigors of the NFL. And, you kind of like to see, who the dumb guys are that might smoke and test positive for pot, which now is probably not as big a deal as it once was. It's still illegal in most states and things, but, you just want to, you want to say, hey, is this guy that dumb? You know he's going to be tested for marijuana, and he goes ahead and does it anyway, and you know, doesn't show, you know, a lot of awareness on that guy's part, but it happens every year, you know, and, but, and then you like, you know, you certainly like to see if you're an area scout, you, you want to see if your suspicions are confirmed about how you got a guy graded. If, you know, he works out really well, athletically, you already know you like him as a football player in gear. Now, hey, does he run as fast, you think? Because a lot of times, you know, you might see a receiver that's got super competitive speed or a defensive back. Let's talk, you know, about Desmond, let's see, from Iowa, who ended up going out to San Diego. And here was a great defensive back, but he ran, like a 4.59 or 4.61 at the combine. He dropped to the fifth round, and of course, he started as a nickel corner and as a corner and played safety and everything else out there, you know, at Los Angeles Chargers now, you know, when he was drafted. But everybody knew he was a great football player. He just didn't run particularly fast, but hey, he fell to the fifth round. So there's surprises like that. You know, you like to see, you go, oh man, that guy is a great football player, didn't run as fast. But then you say, well, conversely, you'll go, hey, this guy isn't that good a football player, but he runs really fast. You know, do I want to, you know, take a chance on him? He's got some traits for like a defensive back position. He can run really fast, but he doesn't have any awareness. He can't track a ball. He can't do this. But, you know, coaches will think, oh, I can teach that guy because he can run fast. You know, I mean, it just, there's a variety of things that you're looking at, but you want to know how they interview. You want to know how their physicals come out. And you just kind of, the little bit of time you get to spend with a guy, kind of get a feel for him if you're not an area guy, because an area guy will really know these guys inside out because they'll spend time with them at practice and visit with them and all that and kind of get to know them over, you know, a year or two. Whereas at the combine, you only get 15 minutes and it's hard to, until you bring them in, you know, for a visit at your facility, but you don't get, you know, can't ask too many questions to get to know a guy that well there.
Dan, you obviously, you know, I'm assuming you're going to be at the combine or at least following it very closely. When you look at the reports of, you know, the outside, the NFL circles, you know, the media reports and whatnot, usually there's always like a player or two or three that the media has ranked high, but the NFL community isn't as, and the scouting community isn't as high on, and vice versa. Who are some of those players right now that maybe, you know, nobody's talking about, but in the media and, you know, the draft analysts, but are really rocketing up NFL boards at this point?
Well, you know, I think that obviously the need for tackles and things, but people are, there's some buzz there. And then how many, you know, those receivers, who's going to be first? Is it going to be Judy from Alabama, who's a great route runner? He's got really good speed. Do you want a little bigger guy like D.D. Lamb from Oklahoma? You know, I think that people want to see those guys run, how they do. Everybody knows that Ruggs from Alabama can fly. They want to see him run that, you know, 4.31, 4.2, or 4.30, 4.29 maybe, which, I mean, I scouted for 15 years National Football League, and I probably had a handful of true 4.3 guys, and the one 4.2 guy I had, I didn't turn the time in because I didn't believe it. You know what I mean? I turned him in as a 4.3 guy. But one of my fellow scouts had the same time I did. So I guess we had Joey Galloway a little faster than we put his time down one time. But anyway, you know, I think that Delpit, we still like him up in the top 15. He's fallen a little bit from LSU because, you know, people are concerned about his tackling but he played with a sprained ankle much of the year and, you know, McKinney kind of moved ahead of him a little bit from Alabama in some regard, but I think in NFL circles, Delpit's still the guy up there ahead of McKinney at safety. And then there'll be a battle of what other linebackers. You know, I think Murray is well thought of from Oklahoma, who can cover and go sideline to sideline. Kenneth Queen from LSU has really jumped out and as a guy that could go late in the first round as a linebacker. And it'd be real interesting to see. I think that maybe more of the media people and whatever got Chenault from Colorado up really high, but I think his physicals at the combine will come into play there, because the guy, when he's healthy, is very talented, but he's, you know, he's been injured a whole lot over his career. And I just don't know how with all these receivers, you could take the guy in the first round. You know, he's 6'2", he's about, you know, 212, 215, somewhere in there, but he'll make a great play, and you might not see him for a while because he's injured, you know. So I think that those are all things. And then, hey, running backs, you got three of them that people like, and Dobbins, Swift, and Taylor from Wisconsin. You know, Taylor has fumbled 18 times in his career. That's not a good thing. We got him in the second round primarily for that reason. He does have some skills, whereas Swift is a guy that open field is really tough to tackle, but he's a complete guy, catches the ball, blocks well, and has great running instincts. And then you got Dobbins, who is he's been a machine running, excellent zone runner, inside zone, outside zone, caught the ball well, does stick his nose in there. Like, I think, you know, one time somebody knocked him back or something. I was, oh, he can't block. Well, yeah, he can block, and he's pretty good. So him and Swift will certainly both be starters whenever they get drafted.
And then I wanted to ask you about a couple specific positions where the Giants are concerned, because their front seven, you know, they have to beef that up. They have to add off-ball linebackers. They have to add edge rushers, and ideally maybe another defensive interior guy. Now, in this era of the NFL where you have defenses that are quote-unquote multiple, how much trickier has it become to kind of gauge what you want and what qualities, because, you know, no one player is going to be able to do it all. I think you know, it's more substitutions in the age of the multiple defense. So how much, you know, based on what you know about the Giants and their personnel, and you know, what little you might know about Patrick Graham in his 1 year as defensive coordinator, what are some names that maybe we can look at for that front seven that the Giants might look at?
Well, I'll tell you, Isaiah Simmons from Clemson has got to be in the mix, because, you know, that basically, like I said, everything's multiple on the defensive front, and that's why the versatility of Isaiah Simmons is so important, because he can play a big nickel safety. He can play, you know, the linebacker in the 4-2, the 4-2-5 scheme. I mean, he can walk out and play a man up on a tight end. He can blitz. He started out his career as a safety, so you know he can cover. He kind of just got bigger, and so now he moves in that safety position where he was a puzzle piece and pawn for the Clemson defense, where they could line him up anywhere and blitz him, and very talented guy. And I think that he's going to be a consideration. You know, I think at the Giants, I think Dave Gettleman really wants to bring a tackle in. You know, Reimers, with being a free unrestricted free agent, obviously Wirfs would fit right in there, right, and then eventually work over to left. You know, but I think that linebacker spot, I don't think there's any pass rusher that's, like I said, going to be up there unless the, you know, Dave was really lucky and, you know, Chase Young fell to him. But I don't think there's anybody else really worthy up there that is a top four pick. Isaiah Simmons, I think you'd have to say, because of his versatility, which we talked about earlier, a guy that can play a lot of places across that front, is going to be in the mix, you know, or an offensive tackle. And of course you can't get enough defensive backs. And, you know, so I think at least Okuda is probably going to be talked about there at four, but, you know, a lot of people think he's going to go three to Detroit, but, you know, you don't know, but the smart money right now would say an offensive tackle, or maybe even Simmons, and certainly Chase Young if he falls there.
Does it, I mean, after all these years of doing this, Dan, does anything ever surprise you coming out of the draft? I mean, I you study it so thoroughly, and you probably have seen a lot of different scenarios and whatnot, but I mean, does anything still surprise you from year to year?
No, well, since the great Al Davis passed away, you could always count on him taking, you know, a measurable guy, a guy who could really run fast, the fastest guy in the draft, or the biggest guy, a biggest athletic guy that might not be a good football player, but Al would take him. And so now with some of the new general managers out there, they try to do some different things. And, you know, there's really, and, you know, 1 year the Bengals actually traded up, you know, to get Kajana Carter. And that was a shock. I mean, nobody thought in a million years that they would be trading at that time. And I don't think they've made a trade since in that first round. If they did, it hadn't been many. But so, you know, I've seen a lot of things. I've seen quarterbacks go way before they should. You know, second round quarterbacks going in the first round. But if you don't, you know, if you don't stick to your board and you waffle a little bit, or you worry about rumors, or see all that stuff, you got to be, you know, in the submarine, I call it, where everything else is blocked out, and you go by your board and what you do, and you stick to that. And if you do that, you'll be okay. But if you start waffling a little bit, and you know, coaches come in and say, well, hey, you know, we really got to have this guy, and we lost this guy at free agency, and we need it. All these decisions are made, you know, before showtime, you know, on the night of, you know, the draft, where you got your first round, and then the next night we got second, third, all that stuff, you know, on your board. Like I said, you just peel it off your board. So, no, I don't think I've been surprised by much. And if I always like to follow up and say, you know, hey, or look at, you know, my guy. Well, Al, if you remember a few years ago, I mean, Stanley was our top tackle. I mean, he wasn't even close to me. And then, you know, everybody liked Tunsil. A lot of people liked Tunsil. And to me, it wasn't even a contest. You know, and of course, you know, Stanley was the Pro Bowler this year, but Tunsil made, you know, a pro, you know, as an alternate and stuff too. All pro as an alternate. So they're both pretty good players, but we were a Stanley kind of guy. So, but anyway.
Well, Dan, it's been a pleasure hearing from you. It's going to be a fun time, as always, at the Combine. I assume you're going to be there with your team?
Well, so I'll tell you what, I personally won't be there because there's so much dead time, but I do have a lot of our scouts will be there, and we'll have insight and things. I tell you, I went to the Combine for like 18 years, and back when, hey, when I went a lot of time, it was just the scouts and the players, the you know, and the doctors, and you know, coaches, players, scouts, docs, the physicians, and that was it. And it was pretty low key. The guys cranked it up and really played hard. Now, you know, sometimes you're wondering if those bright lights, you know, if it's too much for some of the players sometimes, you know. So but hey, it should be a fun time on prime time for everybody.
It's going to be a longer day, certainly, for those of us in the media who are trying to keep track of all that stuff. But Dan, before we let you go, just let everybody know what you have available as far as subscription products and what you've got on your website or anything special you got coming out.
Well, thank you, Patricia. Yeah, if fans just go to ourlabs.com, they'll be able to in fact, we've got on all our NFL depth charts, we've got the free agents marked on there in red, the unrestricted free agents. And then the college depth charts, we've got our grades to this point prior to the combine by color code. So the guy's green, he'll be a first round guy. Purple will be first day guy. And black could be free agent, late round, blue, et cetera. And fans can go and do our mock draft challenge. Everybody likes to have a mock draft. So what we do, Patricia, we'll give them $500. For the best mock draft. We've done that now 6 or 7 years, and the fans have a lot of fun with it. They have their own mock draft. But to get to 500, they have to have 7 rounds. not one round. I think all of us could probably close our eyes and pick a one round mock draft anymore, but it gets a little tough when we start going the second, third, fourth, fifth through the seventh rounds.
Indeed. I know it took me 3 days to put together not only a mock draft, but a complete off season plan of action for the Giants. 3 days using a simulator. I was like, wow, if it's taken me 3 days to do one team, I can just imagine how long it must take to do, you know, all 32 teams in seven rounds.
Right. Exactly.
All right, folks. I want to thank Dan Shonka of Our Lads for coming on. I want to thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned. We have plenty more coming up this week on the Locked On Giants podcast as we get you ready for Indianapolis and the NFL Combine next week. Have a great day.